White Centipede Noise Podcast is made possible by your support via Patreon. Go to patreon.com/whitecentipedenoise to support, and stay tuned to hear about the exclusive benefits and bonus content available with this episode. You're now listening to White Centipede Noise Podcast. My name is Oscar Brummel, and today my guest is Samantha Hernandez of Parasite Nurse, a cut-up harsh noise project based in New York City. Samantha, welcome to White Centipede Noise Podcast.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Thank you so much for joining me. You've had a lot going on these past couple years, and recently you have a new album out on Oxen, a new CD called Life is Beautiful, which I guess at this point isn't so new.
It came out right before me and Jackson went on tour.
Right.
So probably like September, October.
It's a pretty remarkable album, and I'm wondering how that album differs or... if there's any conscious development or separation between that and previous works, previous releases, previous albums.
There's a lot of difference. I think from everything else I've ever done, a lot of it has to do with just like the gear that I was working with. Everything before that, except for Caretaker, had been like with pedals, and samplers and stuff. And Caretaker was like my first like foray into using modular synths like as a recorded medium. And that album I was still pretty early in like my journey with modular synthesis. And Life is Beautiful, I like had a much more I have more money, so I had more modules, and it allowed me to do things that I wasn't previously able to do. There's also like a conscious choice to like make it a deeply personal album. I was going through like kind of a rough patch. I think it's reflected pretty well on that record.
A lot of your work seems to deal with, you know, personal topics, but this one, yeah, in particular. Can you share anything about what that album is about?
Sure. So a lot of it has to do with just like mental health stuff. I have a lot going on. I'm pretty heavily medicated. I don't think I was taking my medication very much at that point. So it was a lot to do with that. I also went through like a breakup with a... my now best friend, and that hit pretty hard. That's what the fabled last song is about. It's me crying about that and then doing cut up over it.
Yeah, I was actually wondering, I was going to ask you what that sample was.
Yeah, it's me crying into a granular sampler.
Damn, okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about your, you know, your modular setup and your approach to cut up. I mean, your work has always been quite cut up. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And to me, it sounds like there's kind of an interesting difference that like you're using these modular synths and things like that. And a lot of this cutting up comes from like staccatoed silence or like mini texture put into the synths from like, I don't know, pausing or just jittering or cutting. Can you talk about your philosophy with cut up, how you work Is there a lot of post-production in your cut up?
No. The only post-production I do is like EQing and mastering. I don't do any, I have in the past, but as of late, I haven't done almost any post-production, cuts. I guess like, my approach is that I just take field recordings of sounds that I think are interesting or, would make for a good cut. I'll compile them for like a while and, put them into a DAW, and I'll create like what's called like a reel. For the Morphogene users know what I'm talking about. So it's like a 2 minute and however long sample, that's stereo, and each channel has different, samples going on. This is not something I was previously able to do, before going modular. This is a exclusively modular kind of thing for me. So the Morphogene's controlled by a make noise pressure points. And I also have a Erica Synth joystick that controls like panning and also.
Can you explain what the pressure points is?
Oh yeah, sure. Pressure points is a touch control. It's a touch controller. It's like a, it sends different control voltage based on like your settings on the knobs and then where, like which pad you touch. There's four pads. Yeah. Then the Erica Synth joystick also sends CV. And that determines which side of the sample is playing and where it's panned to. So that's like one. And then I have another sampler that, is, another granular sampler. All of my samplers are granular. That's just controlled. I can select which sample is going to play with the joystick. It sends a gate to the file input. It's stereo, so I have two Chargatronic M11 like VCA buttons that control like which side of the speakers it's going to come out of. And yeah, a lot of like the sound that I go for is mostly just like glitched out field recordings run through some distortion.
Is the distortion mostly also modular gear?
Yeah, it's all modular. I use the 100 grit. I have two of them because I love it so much. It's really cool. It's got some like touch points that like circuit bend the module. So you get some cool, like, weird stuff going on with, like, the resonant filter in there. It's pretty nice.
You don't have to do this now, but do you have any, I guess your stuff's probably all on a rack, right? You can't just hold it up so easily, right?
It's kind of heavy.
Yeah.
Real. But maybe, like, I can switch to my phone at some point and I can, like,
do a little. We can see if we can do that later. Well, that's interesting. I was going to ask you about some of the sounds that I'm hearing in your work, and I was curious. I thought maybe you were using some sort of synth that was really simulating kind of like a dragging metal sound or some of these field recordings. But you are really, when I'm hearing that in the work, I'm probably hearing an actual field recording or a recorded sound. Is that correct? Or a sample?
Correct.
I mean, how did you develop this method?
So in like 2021, I got my first ever sampler. Well, not my first sampler, but my first like real deal sampler, and not just like the Korg Volca sample, which is what I started out with. And I just like didn't know what to throw on the sampler. So I just started taking field recordings and like running them through distortion and seeing how it sounded. And eventually it like just transferred over when I went modular. And now I'm out here making stereo reels and
yeah, that's pretty interesting. That's pretty, I mean, quite remarkable that this type of cut up that you're doing is really all live. In my mind, like, I always think of cut up being something that you sit down and kind of build in post-production, but so you're able to rip what you play on the record like live.
Yeah.
Is it just as like what I hear on a record, is that a take that's maybe taken a long time to perfect, or are there like 10 outtakes or attempts? Is it as easy to play what you want to deliver live as it is to record it?
So I'm like a super perfectionist. So I do a lot of outtakes. I maybe will record the same track 5-10 times and go through them and like see which one I feel the best about. But I can usually tell, like, when I nailed it, I'm like, oh yeah, that felt good. As far as like a live set goes, I practice meticulously, like for hours and hours and hours, just like locked away in my room, like, you know, going at it. So by the time the show comes around, I'm like pretty well versed in exactly what I'm going to do for the most part. There is like a little bit of level of improvisation, but like, it's minimal.
In composing the tracks, are you diagramming things? Are you improvising? Are you just kind of going into it, letting the gear lead you? Or are you kind of like starting out with what you want it to sound like and how you want it to go, and then going to the gear after that? You know what I mean?
So I write to a timer, and I'll have like an idea of like the flow of a track. Like, I won't necessarily know exactly what it sounds like in my head. Like, I'm not, you know, that type of person, but, I'll generally go in and be like, okay, I want to start out like rip and cut up. And I want to do that for, I don't know, like a whole minute. So I'll kind of just like mess around with my gear for like about a minute, like minute intervals, and then figure out what feels good and then take it from there. And be like, okay, now like the next passage will be like more, like a stereo wall or something. And, that'll last for however long. So I piecemeal it together. But it's all like written to a timer, and like, I know, like, I figure out what I'm going to do, and then I can redo that.
Roman Leva recently made a comment online somewhere about Life is Beautiful, that he had listened to it on headphones a couple times and really liked it, but then listened to it on like a stereo system, through stereo speakers, and like that it really, really shined then. I'm curious about your recording process and relationship to like stereo versus headphone recording, mixing, composition. And also just like, I always wonder about this because people living in New York usually oftentimes have pretty limited space and studio space. You know, it's not like being in the Midwest where you might have more access to like a basement with a big PA and, you know, you can really blast stuff and mess around. How do you work in terms of monitoring, and how does, you know, that plays big into cut up, because, you know, you're working so much with the stereo field.
So I just have a couple studio monitors on a noise table and set up in my room with all my synths on it. And luckily I live in a building where nobody cares if I'm like blasting harsh noise at 2 a.m. I try not to get too loud with it. You know, I try to be respectful, but it's mostly just two Mackie Bluetooth speakers. Like, okay. That I've set up in my room, and I do everything on them. I don't really use headphones. I don't like the way headphones work as far as like mixing and mastering and stuff. I much prefer to have like a studio monitor situation. I get transfers over to other stereo systems better than like it would with like my like cheap studio monitor headphones.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I experienced that same thing when I listened to your albums, because I really am a fan of speakers, and I feel headphones can be irritating. I think the stereo field is too exaggerated. You know, sometimes cut up noise on headphones can be kind of irritating because it's too exaggerated. You know what I mean? Like, it's too, it's too close, and you hear the separation too much. Whereas like coming out of speakers, you hear the cuts and you hear the stereo movement, but it's not like you're being limited and like drilled into just like the ears.
Yeah. It can be like a little, funny with your equilibrium, I feel like, with headphones. Yeah.
I've noticed you said you are putting on shows these days.
Yeah.
So you might, so you live somewhere where you're able to do that.
Yeah. I live in a building in Bushwick and I just got super lucky and have a basement in a backyard. So we've been doing basement shows. Is it once a night?
Wow. Once a night?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like a compound kind of thing.
No, it's just an apartment building, but, I have cool neighbors and, you can't really hear anything outside. So it's kind of cool like that. Everything's pretty well contained in the basement. Some of the basement's soundproofed. It used to be like a recording studio. I forget, some rappers like recorded here one time. I forget which ones, but
that's cool.
It's very funny.
What is the New York scene like these days? Like right now? I mean, because it's always changed so much. And of course, Dead Gods was such a big pillar for some years. But I mean, they closed. I don't know exactly what they're doing right now, what the status is or the plans. But what's the scene like right now?
Honestly, it's kind of cracking. There's a pretty, like, steady flow of shows going on. The people who are active are good. I'm not super, like, well-versed in, like, the younger crowd. Or, like, the more, like, weirdo experimental stuff. I'm pretty strictly, like, a harsher. But the shows the Dead Gods are, like, doing still are, like, incredible. They're really holding it down for New York. And the show that we had here a few weeks ago was incredible. Like, a solid turnout, solid basement show turnout. It wasn't overwhelming, which was nice. But still, like, a solid, like, it was packed. It was cool.
Yeah.
I know Issue just had their season close actually the same night that we had the show here. But they've been super active with, like, more experimental stuff. Jackson's the technical director of that, so I'm always hearing about what's going on at Issue. There's a lot going on for a lot of people. There's, like, the Gen Z noisers who do, like, nightcore remixes with, like, wall noise over it or whatever. I don't know. Like, that's happening here.
What do you know about that world? Because I'm very curious about what's going on there. Because when I was back in Minneapolis, too, there was some kid who opened for my friend. Oh, the band Burning. He opened for them. I think his name was RX Cowboy. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like noise rap. It was all right, but he was like a Gen Z kid and he brought a bunch of his friends out. And a friend of mine was like, has been mixing his album. And I guess my friend was like, oh, this shit sounds like, you know, like Birdseed from White House. And he was like, who's that? You know, like, like this, these kids like that are doing stuff, but have like no real connection or frame of reference to kind of the older stuff. And I think it's very interesting. What do you know about that?
Not a lot. I know that a lot of it comes from just like being like in the party scene. Like Chaos Computer, for instance, had a lot of crossover between like raver kids and like a lot of young kids would go there. And also it would have like rip and noise shows. So, you know, like the young Gen Z kids who maybe, just wanted someplace to do ketamine that night, would end up at the noise show. And then like, you know, my hypothesis would be that they would just be like, oh, that's kind of cool. What if I put like some breakcore over that and like a weird ambient track and called it like harsh noise.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's kind of cool. Like, I mean, it's not for me personally, but like, yeah. It's cool. I mean, the kids are all right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They gotta be. The second batch of releases from Necessary Fixation is now available, including Systems, Disaggregate C20, a highly focused recording centered on exploring the interactions between mixer feedback and source processing, Willowbrook and Systems Split C30, two takes on monolithic in-the-red harsh noise synthesis, Orthodox harsh noise wall paired with quadrupled signal overload harsh noise, and Rien, the new source recording C30. New ideas in extremely sparse minimal crackle studies for true static fanatics. Please direct all ordering and wholesale inquiries to shrouded.in.antiquity@proton.me. Necessary Fixation is proud to remain home dubbed, DIY printed, and independently distributed. Are you more attracted to fast or slow music?
Fast, absolutely fast. Always have been. Slow music, I don't have a lot of patience for.
What is it about fast music? I mean, like, are you in like grindcore and stuff like that?
Yeah, I have a deep, deep grindcore and punk background. It just hits. I mean, maybe it's like my attention span or like just like the way that my brain operates. But fast music for sure has always hit for me, and like fast noise, quote unquote, whatever that means, has always been like a focal point for me.
I asked some people on Patreon if they wanted to ask you some questions, and I got a few. Kenny Geiger asked told me to ask about your time in Haggis.
Yep. Secrets out. I was the original bass player of Haggis. I try not to let that reflect too much on what I'm doing now. I was in much more interesting grindcore bands than Haggis. That's by far the biggest band I've ever been in. I don't know. It was like 2014 and I was living with this guy, James, and he was like, "Hey, you play bass, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And he's like, "You like grindcore, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And he's like, "Me and this guy have this band and we need a bass player. Would you be down?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." So I went to OMC. This is back in Oakland. I went to OMC and we jammed, and then I was in the band for like a year and a half, and then I quit and just like wasn't vibing anymore. I'm on everything up to the glob split. After that, it's somebody else.
Cool. What about other, band pre-noise music stuff you did?
So I was in this band for a long time called Your Enemy with some dear friends of mine. Actually a couple Providence, Rhode Island people. And previously, my friend Elio, who's, been my longtime tattoo artist. He was the, not the original vocalist, but the vocalist when I joined originally. That was the thing for years. I was doing that. Played with like Excruciating Terror, and I don't know, did like a bunch of stuff. It was cool. Did like a couple like West Coast runs. We did some East Coast stuff too with Kaya from Florida. And then I was in most recently, as far as grindcore goes, this band called Snitch Grinder with my friend Calder. It's just a two-piece. And it was just like West Coast grindcore meets Suffering Mind, as well as I could pull that off. I'm not claiming to be the greatest guitar player, but, you know, I can play fast.
Cool. Nice. Tell me about your recent tour in Europe.
Oh, it was incredible. I hadn't been to Europe in like 14 years or something like that prior. And it was just overwhelmingly positive. Like, they're even the low points were like funny, you know? Yeah. I flew into the UK by myself. This guy, James Shearman, booked a show for me and put me up for like a whole week. Like, I had a plan to stay with this girl that I knew, but it turned out she was gonna be out of town. He was like, "Oh, it's okay, you can stay with me at like my parents' place." And I was like, "Oh, that's wildly hospitable of you." Like, wow. I spent a week in London. I met some just incredible people. Ended up playing a show on the South Shore in this like weird little recording studio that was pretty cool with Knife Liquor. Yeah, and then I made my way after like a week of being there to Spain, met up with Jackson. We played in Bilbao, and that just set the tone for the rest of the tour. Like, everyone was so welcoming and so like chill and showed us around, had a great time, made some like, you know, lifelong connections.
You mentioned you were playing in Spain. Like, Spain is not a place with a lot of like typical noise scene, I don't think. Were you guys kind of connecting with like some more of the punk, grindcore, general DIY people out there?
No. Nobody from the Czech Republic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He put me on to this guy, Enrique, from Madrid, I believe. who does a project called Tube Tentacles. And oh, yeah, okay. I had originally hit him up asking about Madrid, and he was like, actually, we should go to Bilbao. It's going to crack like way more.
Cool.
So he put me in touch with Johanna, who runs Donations Project in Bilbao, which is this incredible space. And together we all kind of just like made it happen. It was really cool. A great turnout. Everyone who played ripped. I couldn't have asked for like a better like first like official night of tour, to be honest. That's awesome. Yeah.
I can't remember all of the other shows you played, but I mean, it seems like you did play some places that aren't as often played and are harder to book. And that's really cool to know that, you know, it's like, okay, you played Berlin, you played like Netherlands with Jim, right? But mm-hmm. but like, I don't know, Bilbao, I don't think of when people hit me up like, oh, where can I play in Europe, or like what contacts, and it's like Italy is really hard, mm-hmm. Spain is hard, France is hard, you know, it's kind of like those are sort of countries that are kind of hard to penetrate.
Yeah, we had a hell of a time getting a show in France. We ended up just like skipping it all together and just like having like a 22-hour travel day from Bilbao to Belgium.
Yeah.
Which was taxing, to say the least.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would highly recommend Bilbao to any noise people looking to play a show. Get in touch with Donations Project. She's really great.
How does Europe differ from the USA generally when it comes to touring?
Despite like the whole like wild level of hospitality that you experience in Europe. Travel's a lot easier, I think, than in the US. The US is so car centric. And that makes it really difficult because I'm about to be 34 and still don't have a learner's permit. So, you know, that is always a factor that I have to put into play when trying to do a US tour. Whereas in Europe, I was just like, yo, you want to just take the train? And Jackson was like, yeah, I'm down. Like, why would we get a car when we can just take the train everywhere? And we didn't really realize that there was maybe going to be a couple buses thrown in the mix, but you know, it was fine.
That's still rough. I mean, that is nice, but it's not easy to do. There's gotta be rough moments, right?
Yeah. We had a funny enough in Paris, we had a mishap. Our bus was hella late. And then when it showed up, it had the wrong information on it. So it just left without us. And like, we were really hitting up Flix bus, like, yo, like, what's good? Like, this bus never showed up. And they're like, actually, it did. You're all idiots. And we're like, well, okay. So I had to get on train line and like do some real quick thinking and wound up getting us another bus. But it was definitely like the lowest point of tour for sure. It was just like a nightmare. We were just like this pissy smelling like outdoor bus terminal. Like, I don't know if you've been to the Paris bus station before, but it's not ideal. There was a fight that happened. It was insane. It was a truly unhinged time.
Was that the 22-hour travel from
that Spain was halfway to
Belgium? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a time.
What about playing with nobody? And what about Czech Republic? How was that?
Prague is my favorite city in the world. I've been saying that for years. It was the best time. Seeing nobody play was maybe the highlight of the tour for me. Just masterful, masterful cut up, using so little too. I mean, it's just like truly humbling to like see somebody rip a set with, you know, a minimal setup and have it sound so massive and so varied. Everyone who played that night was really incredible. Talk is Trouble did a really cool set. He usually does like, I don't know if you're familiar, but he does like a ambient modular stuff, but he like broke out some harsh shit for it. So it was kind of cool. The venue was perfect. It's like I think it's like a mostly punk venue. But they had like a little kitchen bar area in the back and, like served food. it was really great. The sound guy was good. We got off to a bad start just because he gave me a couple of shoddy cables, and okay. I thought my gear was broken.
Oh.
And then the DI box was set on mono, and I was just, like, having a meltdown, and luckily Jackson saved the day and, like, troubleshooted everything for me.
He's a real tech, like, sound guy wizard, isn't he?
Yeah, he's New York's premier sound guy, I feel.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, he really knows what he's talking about. He's been doing it for a really long time. Yeah, like I said, he's doing the technical director stuff for Issue Project Room right now, and he does stuff with Pioneer Works, and he was doing stuff for Knockdown Center for, like, ever. He's a wealth of knowledge as far as sound goes.
Tatuata is an EU-based label and distribution for harsh noise, industrial, and experimental sounds. The online distro is located at satatuata.net, providing regular updates of new releases and offering worldwide shipping. That's Satatuata, SATATUHATTA.net.
You've also played with or collaborated with Stress Orphan, right?
Yeah. Me and Eric were fast friends maybe like in 2019. I think 2019, like right when I dropped my very first 3-inch CD.
Mm-hmm.
He reached out to me because he got it at Dead Gods. I had dropped some off there, and he found me on Instagram and was like, yo, like, what is your deal? Who are you? And I was like, I don't know. we ended up living together for a while, and we just, like, would talk all the time. Like, we were, like, really good roommates. He was like, yo, you should be the sickness to my slogan. And I was like, damn, that's hella funny. I'm so down. So, like, we just kind of tried it out one time, and it worked out really well. He's like, I'm never going without, like, a backup person again.
That's a good point. Sickness to slogan. That's perfect. I never made that connection. That's really accurate. Is that something that's continuing on? Or was that a one-time kind of thing?
We do it as much as I can. I'm pretty, like, overwhelmingly busy. So if I can make a show, I will. But if not, then he has a roster of people that he can ask. But we're the original team, the original Stress Orphan team.
Do you get up in the mix like he does, like, or do you stay pretty calm behind the gear?
I stay pretty calm behind the gear and try to look like I'm doing something. Sometimes I'll get into it if I'm, like, feeling myself or something, but, I'm usually pretty stoic. That's kind of my whole vibe when I'm performing.
Right.
I don't really, I'm not super performative with it, but
yeah. Well, you can't really be when you're doing cut up, right? I mean, you really have to be focused, right?
Yeah, I would say
some people can flip out and do this kind of stuff, but if you're doing really minor, I mean, are you doing a lot of minor adjustments and things like that? Is it pretty precise? I haven't really worked with modular stuff like that, but it's a lot of knobs, right? I mean, I get the sense that there's a lot of variables at play, right?
I do a little bit of knob twiddling, yeah, but a lot of it is mostly just like the pressure points, the M11s, and the joystick. That are really going on. There's like on one sampler, like I like have to like shift through a couple banks with a button at some points during a set, but for the most part it's just touchpad, buttons, joystick. So I could in theory like act a little crazier than I do, but I choose not to.
So when I see all that stuff with all the wires and all the knobs, it is kind of like set it and forget it in some way. Like most of that stuff you kind of dial it in and leave it be, right?
Yeah, that's not a lot of people's approach, but that is absolutely 100% my approach. I get so much anxiety thinking about like unpatching and repatching. I'm like, oh my God.
Phage Tapes is a US-based label ran by Sam Stockson, releasing an eclectic range of extreme music, rooted in noise and power electronics, but it's also dedicated to EBM, industrial, even punk. Phage is truly a label where you are guaranteed to find at least a few excellent releases no matter what your taste. He's committed to releasing what he himself loves. He releases work by legendary veteran artists as well as lesser known newcomers. He's recently released vinyl and CDs from Amnot, IRM, Dead Body Love, Choke Chain, Terror Cell Unit, Caligula 031, Andrew Nolan, Slipthroats, Scathing, Wilt, Laterra 22, The Rita, and much, much more. The quality of the releases meet at the intersection of professionalism and DIY, often featuring high-quality, hand-screen-printed artwork. Check out his extensive catalog at phagetapes.bandcamp.com. You can also check out Sam's recent episode of Noise Cribs on WCN-TV. Sam welcomed me into his home and showed me how he runs his label. Lots to learn in this episode. You can watch that at patreon.com/whitecentipedenoise. Another person on Patreon asked, what is your favorite Eurorack module? That was Nikolai Vargas.
That's a great question. It's hard to choose because they all do such different things. But I think the mainstay of my setup has always been the Morphogene. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Morphogene, it's a granular sampler and like a kind of works like a tape station. And like just like the terminology they use like splices and like reels and all that. It's kind of kitschy and I kind of hate the make noise aesthetic, to be honest. I think it's overly complicated. That's my one gripe with it. Other than that though, like it does exactly what I want it to do every time. It glitches perfectly. The playback options are incredible. The sound quality is untouchable as far as I'm concerned. I don't have a sampler that sounds better than that one. It holds a lot. Like it's really, once you like learn like the stupid make noise terminology, like it's pretty intuitive and like just memorize a couple buttons and there you go. You're in. Like you have this incredible, versatile sampler that can do everything from like beautiful soundscapes to what I do with it, you know? And everything in between. It's right. Truly like the jackknife of samplers.
And do you feel like there's kind of like a scene or a genre that has evolved oriented around modular harsh noise?
I wouldn't call it a genre because I feel like a lot of modular harsh noise sounds wildly different from each other, you know?
Yeah.
There is like a low key community, like, you know, like there's, I always see like some fool, like, you know, like, oh, what do you got in your case? You know, kind of yeah. Like looking around, like maybe want to punish you a little bit about it, like, which is totally fine. I'm here for it, you know? I mean, there's a little community, I would say, but I don't think there's like a genre. I don't think that like modular noise sounds like any one way.
Sure. What does a modular rig cost I don't mean to like have you put your business out there, but I mean like what is a solid like setup case rack cost?
They have shared systems that go for like $25,000 to $3,000. $2,500 to $3,000. Mine, I don't know how much, I lost track of how much I spent on it, but I would say like maybe like what I'm working with is probably around like $4,000. That's like including the case, which is like by far the biggest expense. But I mean, you know, I also have like a skiff that I maybe put like a rack into. And
what's a skiff?
A skiff is like a little baby case. Usually doesn't have a back to it. I actually had like a custom wooden case made for it from my friend who's laptop I'm borrowing, her old roommate was like a woodworker, so he like hooked me up with that. But yeah, skiff, usually like one row, 84 HP, sometimes 104, but it's just like It's mostly an effects unit. I have like a couple utility modules in there, but I use it for an ambient project that I do primarily.
What's that called?
Thea.
Cool. You do employ some ambient elements into Parasite Nurse. Tell me about the importance of silence in your work. I mean, the beginning of Life is Beautiful is like several seconds of, I mean, quite a few seconds of silence. It's a pretty bold statement. I was like, every time I put it on, I'm like, is this thing working? Like, and I'm like, oh yeah.
The silence. I feel that the silence really builds a lot of tension, and also like allows you to like sit with like the discomfort of like just silence. Silence is so discomforting to so many people. And I think that like it's cool to have the surrounding sounds just like that are naturally happening in a space become part of the piece. I've had that backfire on me a couple times. I played at this place called Bohemian Grove, RIP. And there was a bathroom in the basement, and like right when I hit some sound, somebody flushed the toilet, and I was like, fuck, like, ruined the moment for me. Like, I started like busting up laughing, like, you know. Yeah, I think the silence is mostly like a tension builder and just a way. It's like kind of punishment. Like, yeah, like you're gonna like sit with this for a minute and like really think about what you're doing.
Do you experience or enjoy silence often in your daily life, or are you someone who's listening to music like all the time?
So like when I'm at work, I don't really listen to music because it kills my phone battery. But I mean, I'm in like Manhattan for the majority of my day, so there's always like sound going on in some capacity. When I'm home, I'll usually have like a background like comfort show happening, or like sometimes like music or noise or whatever. I can sit with silence. I don't mind it. I know a lot of people have trouble with it, but I don't mind it. I like silence.
The comfort show thing is interesting that, you know, like, I think more and more people are really need like something on in the background at home or if they're falling asleep. I mean, I notice that I get into that. I don't always need it, but I get into that phase where I'm like really, I get accustomed to listening to something to go to sleep, and without it, hard. Mm-hmm. And I don't, some, that just seems, it worries me. It worries me that like we're there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been like a listen to something to go to sleep person since I was like a child. I mean, it's a statement on society, I feel like, and like the advancements of society, or, you know, the lack thereof. I think
people do get really freaked out by silence. Like when, even maybe more so in social environments. Like I've noticed even sometimes certain family members or something like that, like the family gathering, like they want to have the TV on or something like that. Cause the feeling of the room when there's not something going on, people are just kind of face to face, just makes some people very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting phenomenon that we're experiencing right now. The inability to handle silence. I think it's very fun. And I think John Cage could write a phenomenal essay on that.
There's someone, I mean, there's gotta be plenty of people writing about that already. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm interested to read it.
Jonathan Bergen on Patreon asked me to ask you, what's the overall concept or ideas you're processing with Parasite Nurse? And you've touched on that a little bit at the beginning, but are there any more things that you can say are like kind of behind the content of the project?
It's mostly at this point in the game, just become an outlet, for the floodgate of emotions that I am. I spent a large portion of my life, being very emotionally closed off, not accepting them, dealing with them in unchill ways. And now that I'm doing this and, like, not really focusing on traditional music anymore, it's become just a wildly useful tool for me to process my emotions in whatever capacity that is. And I feel like as the project progresses, I feel like those emotions are more and more conveyed by the sound. Yeah, that's kind of it. Like, it originally started with just no intent at all. I just wanted to make rip and harsh noise, but it became just a tool for computing my emotions.
What about your writing? You published a zine recently, didn't you?
Yeah, a while ago. I sat down and wrote out like a little zine. Pretty deeply personal. Kind of just dealt with feelings of disgust and discomfort with my relationships to people in general. My ex will swear it's about her, but it is not. Kyanna, this is not all about you. I know she's watching. it was my first my first real attempt at writing something that was like maybe semi-fictional, but still stemmed in reality. A lot of it's just like exaggeration and like silly worded ways to say things, in my opinion. I mean, when I read it, I'm like, wow, I can't believe I just said that. But I read it out loud for my friend Emily recently. And she seemed really moved by it. So it's kind of cool to see that, like, my writing can have an effect on somebody that isn't just like, okay, wow, that was warped.
Yeah. Is it something you consider closely tied to your noise and sound work?
No. It's kind of its own thing. It's a... just another outlet. I don't regularly write by any means. I would maybe like to. It's just hard to find the motivation to sit down and like really like delve into my thoughts and like, you know, kind of word vomit onto the screen.
What's your 2024 looking like?
I have some personal stuff going on that's going to kind of put shows at my house on the back burner for a little while. But in February, I have a show at Rhizome in D.C. with Emily, who does Weapons Envelope, and Important Hair from Canada, and another local who I believe I played with in Richmond once. Mm-hmm. And then me and Emily are going to be taking off back to Oakland for her birthday, and we're gonna play a show at the Stork Club set up by my friend Lou. Still waiting to hear the rest of the details for that show, but it should be a fun time. I haven't played the Bay in a long time, so it'll be cool to make a return. And
are you from there?
Yeah.
How long have you been on the East Coast?
Like 7 years, so I'm like pretty well assimilated by this point.
Yeah. Any releases coming up, or are you recording much?
So I should have been recording this whole time. For a couple comps, one that James Light is putting out on Packing Plant, which I think will be available for the Hospital Fest that's happening, and a comp that AAD is putting out with some very choice artists.
Cool.
I'm excited for that. Chris from Cypher Productions just hit me up, actually, and we're in the talks about doing a tape sometime this year. No idea what I'm gonna do for that one yet.
With some crazy packaging.
I surely hope so.
It's gotta be, because Cypher always comes with the crazy packaging.
Yeah. And I have a power electronics project.
Really?
That I worked on for a while. It's coming out on Breaching Static sometime.
Boar's label, right?
Yeah, correct.
Cool.
Yeah, it was cool. He hit me up about it and was like, I'd love to put this out. I'm going to do some cool packaging, have some cool imagery. I think it's going to be a pro CDR.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that to come out. It's my first, like, real delve into that world. See how it's received.
Are you doing vocals?
I am doing vocals, yeah. I do everything on a Electron Digitone and three pedals that process vocals and just kind of like let it rip.
Nice.
Yeah.
What was your collaboration with James? What did you guys collaborate on? You appeared on a release that he was. I can't remember exactly what it was.
It was the Driller tape that came out on Hospital.
Right.
Yeah. This was a while ago. We dated briefly, and he wanted to collaborate with something with me, and just randomly asked me one day, he's like, hey, can you just like send me some cut up? And I was like, yeah, dude, for sure. Like, I got you. So I just like recorded like a few minutes of cut up and then sent it over to him, and he arranged it, and like he took care of all like the production and stuff like that. I sent him like a raw track, and it worked out really well. I'm really happy with the way that track sounds. And we've talked about maybe performing together at some point, like doing like a version of that track live, which I think would be really fun.
So what are your top five noise releases of all time?
Okay, so I came prepared. Good. they always change a little bit depending on who I'm talking to and what I've been listening to lately, but there's a couple mainstays. So number one, and I mean, this is no particular order, but number one I have written down is Sickness, I've Become the Disease That Made Me. Sickness was like one of the first like noise artists that I heard a long, long time ago. And it really just had like a deep impact on me and like my taste in noise. And I really appreciate the use of the stereo field, and then sometimes just like hard cut into mono. I think that's like very powerful and like a really interesting choice that he made with that.
Have you ever been in contact with Sickness about?
Yeah. We talked a little bit about like a module that I was having trouble with, and we like to have chatted a little bit. We're not like, you know, like super tight friends or anything, but you know, we can chat.
Yeah.
So number two is Kazumoto Endo, While You Were Out. Just a mainstay of Japanoise. Just like it's a perfect record. Everything that he does on that, I love. It's more refined Killer Bug as far as I'm concerned. So like, and like getting to see him play at End Times last year was just absolutely mind blowing. Like, it was like a bucket list thing for me for sure.
Awesome.
I lost my mind.
I bet.
Number three is Purge's Secret Habit. David and I met maybe like, what was it, 2 years ago now, when he came to the States. And we played at Transpicos together. I had been listening to his music long before meeting him, but meeting him was a real treat. And his use of ambient and harsh together is like what I strive to do. Like, he conveys such emotion with everything that he does. It's truly just incredible to me. His synth work is untouchable as far as I'm concerned. I love every moment of that record. It's
awesome.
Yeah,
I really liked the one on Oxen from a year or two ago. Heartsink, I think it's called, right?
Yeah, that one's super really, really good. It's a little different.
It was quite different than what I had heard from him before and what I was expecting. It was, it's a really unique record.
Yeah, truly, just market growth in the project. Number four is Itch by Zome. That's another one of like my early noise records that has just stuck with me for like, I don't know, like almost two decades now. I love Zome's energy and just like, you know, like we talked about, like, you know, like fast noise, whatever that means. Yeah. He's like the king of it. Just like pedal smashing, harsh noise. It's so sick to me. Really, truly love it. But he has his moments. He knows when to like slow it down, and, like hit a harsh wall or something like that. You know, it's really cool. It's masterful, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, sure. Really nice guy too. I met him at that fest that Johnny threw a couple years ago in LA.
Oh,
it was a treat to meet him. He was very nice and taken aback by my tongue, which I thought was very very funny.
What's your tongue?
He like stopped me mid sentence. Was like, wait a second.
Damn, that's crazy. The camera here is pretty low resolution, I guess, from the stream at least. So I didn't notice that. But that's pretty wild. When did that happen?
Like maybe like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yikes! That's intense. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm a big body mod person.
Anything else about body mod you can tell us?
I don't know. I mean, I don't have like a ton. I'm just pretty heavily tattooed and like have my ears stretched and my tongue split. I had my septum stretched for a long time, but that kind of fucked up my nose and I wasn't too happy about that. But I don't have a septum piercing anymore. Yeah, I don't know. Body modification, it's cool. Not for the faint of heart. So
No. I'm the faint of heart.
That's cool. There needs to be the faint of heart. I mean, you know, I think it's like kind of cooler when people don't have tattoos or piercings or anything. I'm like, that's like kind of a statement in itself in like 2024.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I have zero. Do you have any plans for body modification things you would like to do?
I'm just working on finishing my back piece right now, to be honest. Something that's been on the back burner for me for a long time has been getting my eyes blacked out. But I'm really bad about touching my eyes, so that's maybe not in the cards for me. But it's something that I've wanted to do since, like, I was, like, a child and, like, went on BME Zine and, like, saw the lizard man with, like, his crazy blacked out eyes and stuff, like... I was like, damn, I want that to be me. I want to look like a demon, you know? But
how was that done? Is that done with, like, traditional tattooing?
No. So it's injections. It's like a – I think it's like a 2 or 3 day process. You go in and they inject each side of your eye with ink. And, I think it's like a 3 day process. I think there's, like, 6 total shots that happen. And it just permanently dyes your eyeballs black or whatever color you want to go for.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's something you might do someday?
Maybe someday. It's expensive, inaccessible, and like I said, I'm not great about my eyes. I can barely put eyeliner on, you know? Okay. I'm like, oh my God. But.
Yeah. So what about number 5?
Number 5, facial mask, pig hydraulics.
Nice.
Gotta shout out Facial Mess. Like, I was biting that style for so long. Just that video of him playing in Japan with like 6 pedals, 2 shaker boxes, and an iron cross. Like, that just hit me so hard one day, and like I was like, damn, like I want to do that. And I did.
Yeah.
For a long time. I think he's just the king of pedal smash and cut up.
He is really.
And a nice guy, too. We've, like, super briefly nice spoke guy on the internet. Yeah.
He's a very, very nice fellow. He shouted you out during his interview. I don't know if you heard it.
I did hear that. And it gave me butterflies. I was very flattered and humbled.
Yeah. He's a fan. That's for sure. Yeah. Okay, cool. That's a nice cut up. I mean, that's real true blue. Those are cut up classics for sure. That's a cool list. What about 5 releases or projects or things like that recently of the past year or so? I'm not doing year anymore. I feel like that's a little too much, but recent current things that you're really interested in or really taken aback by.
So I'm going to just shout out like 3 people right off the bat. my homegirls, Rachel Slur, who does Stroker, just like absolutely ripping mono 90s harsh noise, just like worship. It's, she's so good. She just played my basement. She's booked us at her place before. She's just really killer at everything she does. I've never seen her play a bad set ever. Matriarch, Julia is definitely like a force to be reckoned with right now, I feel like. Really killing it with the computer, which I know is maybe not everyone's favorite medium for noise, but I think that when it's done well, it's done so well, and she's really killing it in the game. And Rosie, who does Apologist, she is like the queen of ambient, like just like beautiful, sad, great builds. Always a pleasure to see her play. And it's cool to see like people using like reel to reel, like tape stuff.
Yeah.
In a live setting. Like that's not like super common, I feel like. So she's really setting the bar with that one.
Yep. For sure. Cool.
Yeah. As far as other projects, I'm trying to just like think back to, Negation. Negation put out, that Mitsubishi whatever CD, I forget what it's called, but it's the truck CD. He I think is the best cut up artist of modern times, like of like current cut up. I think he's just the most dialed in, the most like meticulous, and like really really shines, and just like he works so hard on everything that he does. And it shows. All the
modular stuff, right? I like that. I like that Mitsubishi CD a lot. I think I have that sitting up on the shelf somewhere. I just saw it. Yeah, it's a very cool CD.
Yeah, it's very cool. Fully. I don't know if it's fully modular. I think he might be using an Octatrack on there as well. But also the best use of an Octatrack I've ever seen, for sure. Can't sing his praises enough. I mean, I guess like. I'm lacking on a number five here. I truthfully haven't been paying a lot of attention. There's been so much going on in noise. It's hard to keep up. I mean, I'm just going to shout all my friends out. JHK, like,
he's
got a CD coming out that we just had a little listening party for. And it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. Just like... the textures that he's able to get, and he does a lot of post-production, which I think is like really cool because he's still able to pull it off live. Just sent it off to the label today, or not today, yesterday, something like that. I'm really excited to see it drop. I think that it's going to be a big deal. I think that it's really going to be well received.
Who's putting it out?
Oxen.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's all stuff to look forward to for sure. Anything else you want to mention or add, or things I didn't ask you about that I should have, that you want to let the people know about?
I don't know. Maybe I should leave a little bit of an air of mystery. That's always good.
It's always good. Yeah. Podcasts, I mean, I think maybe after, a few years of doing the podcast, people are going to look back and say, he ruined the noise scene. He ruined noise. Everyone just went on and like talked about what they do and who they are and why. And we thought it was cool at the time, but now all the mystery's gone. So, I get frustrated when people decline my invitations, but I also respect it because I'm like, you're doing the right thing, maybe.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there needs to be some level of mystery. It can't all be out there, but I'm happy to provide what I did, at least.
I know we could talk much more about gear, that's for sure. I mean, I'm probably not the best person to ask the questions because I don't know as much about them, but maybe you can if you have a chance, maybe in a minute you can like try, showing me some stuff of your rig, if that's possible.
Yeah, totally. I can like switch to my phone and do a little like overhead shot.
Yeah. Well, Samantha, I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing a little bit of the mystery with us. And I really like your CD on Oxen. Really looking forward to more. And I wish you all the best and take care and keep in touch.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful to be here.
That was Samantha Hernandez of Parasite Nurse. If you head over to the Patreon now, you can hear the extended segment of the interview where Samantha busts out the camera and shows her Eurorack rig in detail and explains what each item does and what she uses it for. She also shared an exclusive Parasite Nurse track called Weak Wrists, which you can get on the Patreon by subscribing at the premium level. Subscribing to the White Xenopy Noise Podcast Patreon is what makes the public episodes of the podcast possible. There's also regular bonus WCN-TV content being published there, including premium content like Noise Cribs. Check out the recent episode of Noise Cribs with Sam Stockson of Phage Tapes. Patreon.com/WhiteXenopyNoise for all that and much more.